the one factor above all other factors that minimizes the damage that divorce has on children is when the parents get healing for themselves.
That comment was made by our guest on the last edition of Focus on the Family as we began a two-part series, a discussion about children of divorce, and we're going to continue that conversation today. This is Focus on the Family. Our guest was Dr. Archibald Hart. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout, and what a privilege it is to not only have you back, those of you in the listening audience, but also our students from the Focus on the Family Institute who are here with us, and hopefully we'll have a chance to open up the microphones and allow them to ask questions a little bit later in the broadcast of our guest. Dr. Hart is a professor of psychology and former dean of the Graduate School of Psychology at Fuller Theological Seminary in Southern California. He's the author of numerous books, including Stress and Your Child, The Sexual Man, and the one we're going to talk about today called Helping Children Survive Divorce. Dr. Hart and his wife Kathleen have three grown children and seven grandchildren. Doctor?
Arch, to set up our topic again today, I want to go back to the mid-80s when Shirley and I were on a vacation. In fact, we'd been traveling for 3 weeks, had our kids with us, and wound up in Washington, D.C. And we were just killing time and enjoying the last 2 days there. We were at the end of the clean clothes and all that sort of thing that happens on a trip like that. And I heard that there was a conference at the White House on the subject of divorce. And I thought that would be interesting. Shirley wanted to go shopping. And so I said, I'm going to see if I can get into this conference. It took me a little while to pull the strings and get the doors open. And by the time I got through all electronic gear and everything, I was late. And I got in. There were about 250 people over in the old executive office building right next door within the compound of the White House. So I got in there, and I was sitting there at the back. And Leilani Watt, who was the wife of the then Secretary of Interior, Jim Watt, was sitting in front of me. And we've been friends for a while. And she leaned back to me and said, I don't think they've been fair to you. And I said, really? I said, who hadn't been fair to me? And she said, the planners of this conference. I said, why not? She said, I don't think they gave you enough time. Huh. I said, time to what? And she said, time to speak. You're speaking. You're the main speaker. And they had forgotten to tell me I was the main speaker at this conference.
And you were there accidentally.
I was there just because I happened to be there, and they forgot to tell me. And I, man, my mind was going buzz, you know, I was trying to think of what. And at that moment, the White House staffer came, tapped me on the shoulder and said, would you come to the platform? I'm walking to the platform. I got 250 people there, and I've got to speak. And they introduced me. Who knows what I said that day? I have no
idea. You remember
idea.
What I said in 82?
I don't remember what I said. All I remember is I had a blue suit on with brown socks. That's what I remember because everything was dirty. And so I did the best I could, and I pulled stuff out of the air, and I spoke for about 10 or 15 minutes. But then the other speaker that morning came to speak, and he had a profound impact on me. It was Dr. Armine Nicolai from Harvard University, wonderful psychiatrist, who talked about divorce that day. And I will never forget the things that he said. In fact, I came home and I wrote it down. And in my December 1984 letter to everybody on our mailing list, I described what he said that day. Oh. Now, this is perhaps based on what is now old information, but it's still valid. Let me read two paragraphs from that letter. Dr. Nicolai presented the latest studies conducted on the subject of parenting, especially as it contributes to mental health in children. The findings were startling. It is now known that emotional development in children is directly related to the presence of a warm, nurturing, sustained, and continuous interaction with both parents. Anything that interferes with that vital relationship with either parent can have lasting consequences for the child. Consider the effects of divorce, for example. One landmark study revealed that 90% of children from divorced homes suffered from an acute sense of shock when the separation occurred, including profound grieving and irrational fears. 50% reported feeling rejected and abandoned, and indeed, half the fathers never came to see their children 3 years after the divorce. one-third of the boys and girls feared abandonment by the remaining parent, and 66% experienced yearning for the absent parent with an intensity that researchers described as overwhelming. Most significantly, 37% of the children were even more unhappy and dissatisfied 5 years after the divorce than they had been at 18 months. In other words, time did not heal their wounds. In summary, Dr. Nicolai said, divorce brings such intense loneliness to children that its pain is difficult to describe or even to contemplate.
Yes.
You agree completely with what he says.
That I could have written those words.
In fact, you did in your book, well, Helping Children Survive Divorce.
That's it. And unless you've been through it, you do not know, you cannot even grasp the depth of the hurt, the fear, the insecurities, the anxiety, and the deeper damage to your self-esteem particularly is it's remarkable.
You and I were talking in my office before we came down here. You made a very interesting statement that you feel, and I believe I agree with you, that divorce, after a relationship has been established, is actually more damaging to a child than the death of a parent.
Yes, I would say that, and I have been through the experience now in our own family, so I know it firsthand.
Your grandchild lost his father.
Two of my grandsons lost their father 2 years ago.
He was killed
in an automobile accident.
What were the ages of his children?
They were 10 and 12. Which, you see, my oldest grandson, that's the age my parents got divorced. Yeah. I have a very
end-of-one
personal study here between how the divorce of my parents impacted me versus how the death of his daddy impacted him. And I can tell you, death of a parent, bad as that is, I'm not wanting to minimize that at all, pales in significance to the impact that divorce has on a child.
Explain why.
Death is final. I had to sit with my two grandsons the next morning. They were at our house.
We went
looking for their daddy.
Very tender moment.
I'll never forget it. To sit them down and look into their eyes and tell them, your daddy died last night. And the shock, the disbelief, and then the crying and the screaming, and you've got to let them just vent it. Now, in the death of a parent, what happens is that the emotional reaction is far greater. It's much more of a Vesuvius, intense thing. Whereas in divorce, the emotions creep up on you a little bit more insidiously.
They're stuffed down.
It's stuffed down. It's not as final as death. Divorce is only the beginning of the problems. You have conflict now, like before divorce is nothing compared to what it is now, as parents begin to fight over the kids and hassle over support and financial matters. Your daddy, if he leaves you, he goes away. He may not come and visit you for 3 years, but he's there somewhere. And so at night, you fantasizing, you're lying awake, wondering, where's my dad? Why has he abandoned me? The first chapter of my book is called Divorced at 12. Because I was divorced, not just my mother. Yeah. I was abandoned.
Before we get back to children, Arch, I want to ask you to do something you may not have expected me to do. But we're talking to husbands and wives out there who are not happy in marriage.
Right.
And there's a lot of conflict, and their personalities don't mesh like they should have, and maybe the marriage has never been very happy. And I don't want to add to the pain of those people by dumping a load of guilt on them. But talk to them a little bit about their children and about what divorce will mean for them as they're facing this decision as to whether to go on together or not.
Well, the first thing I would say is that divorce doesn't solve every marital problem. Lots of people get divorced, and they worse off afterwards. There's no doubt about that. The evidence is that divorce damages adults as well as children.
The families don't divorce. You've always got the same grandparents for the grandkids, and there's linkage there.
But I would plead with parents whose marriage is not going well right now. And every marriage goes through a bad time. But one has to look, and this is a mistake, I think, that we have made, to seeing the need for our own self-fulfillment in marriage. We've got to look beyond that. We've got to look at the interests of our children. And I would at least plead with this, and I don't misunderstand me here, but I would at least say to parents whose children are at that critical stage, say 14 or under, if at all possible, delay your divorce. Mm-hmm. Now, in delaying it, you may find that you work out a marriage.
And seek professional help.
And get some counseling, get some help for it. But whatever else, I mean, I'm just talking bottom line here, whatever else you do, try to delay the divorce. So that your children get to a slightly older stage of life where they have the skills, the ability to be able to make the adjustments with less pain.
You know, another thing that the rest of us need to do is to be very sensitive to those youngsters who have lost a mother or father through divorce or death. You have a story of your grandchild on Father's Day and what happened at school. This is hard to believe.
And it's not only death, but in divorce also, schools, teachers, friends, even family members are not always sensitive. But what happened with my younger grandson, the 10-year-old who lost his daddy, and who I think has emotionally suffered more than the older one, but the accident happened in April, and as you know, in June, Father's Day comes up. And so a couple of weeks before Father's Day, the teacher arranges for the class to start to prepare writing a card or preparing a card for their fathers without any regard to the hurt, the pain that caused my grandson.
He never came and helped him in any way.
And so a day or two later, he wouldn't go to school, and we couldn't figure out why he wouldn't go to school. When a child that age hurts, they don't want to tell you what's hurting. Maybe they don't want to make it conscious or something. Yeah. But it took quite a little bit of pushing him before he told us that in the classroom right now, at this particular class period, all the kids are sitting, designing and preparing a card and stuff for their fathers. What's he supposed to do? Mm. And so my daughter finally went and talked to the teacher, and they made arrangements for him to skip that class and have some other activity to go on. But it was a reminder that the system, and including churches, are not always sympathetic. And when this could be also true for a divorced child, whose parent has left.
A lot of the help in your book, which is entitled Helping Children Survive Divorce, involves getting behind the eyes of the child and meeting whatever needs are there, whatever he or she is feeling and not telling you about, and responding appropriately to those kinds of moments.
Yes, you've got to understand your child and what the child is feeling. And that's difficult. I'm not suggesting it's easy. You've got all this pain of your own to take care of. How are you going to set that aside? But you've got to do that. And that's why you've got to find somewhere you can deal with your own pain so that you can be free then to provide an atmosphere for your child.
Well, I want to reserve the rest of the program, Arch, for these students who are around us here. They've been with us this semester. It's a wonderful bunch of young people. I absolutely love having them on campus. I tell you, we're into a lot of stuff here at Focus on the Family. There's 72 separate endeavors going on here. This is the one that has my heart. I tell you, I just love the Focus on the Family Institute and what's happening there. And we have a microphone set up here, and we're going to invite them to come now and ask whatever questions they wish from yesterday's program and, of course, what we've done today. So whoever's got the courage to start, join us there. Give us your name and what school you're from, the whole group.
Oh, everyone stand.
We've got nearly 40 young people here, so we're going to have a hard time getting this on the air, but we'll take as many as we can right here.
I'm Jessica Anderson from Taylor University, and my question is, what are some specific things that an outsider, someone who is not a family member, can do to help minimize the effects of divorce, of children who've been through a divorce?
Right. That's a wonderful question, that, because I think friends, family members can rally around and help a family going through divorce. Some of the things you can do, if teenage boys or girls, for example, Now, one of the parents isn't there to do certain things. Say the father isn't there. You can help, offer to take the child to some games, to some activities. Mm-hmm. And particularly with my grandsons, this has been most helpful in that younger people have given time and sacrificially spent time with our boys. And that's been a wonderfully healing thing for them.
I think we in the church, it's very easy to criticize mm-hmm. the church. They're the whipping boy for everything that's going wrong in society, and it's not fair. But we have been reluctant oh, yeah. to help the single parent deal with
yes.
this. You got a mother struggling to earn a living and do yeah. all this stuff and come home and
right.
take care of those kids. There's mm-hmm. no dad in the home. Men, go
right.
pick up those kids and take them to a football
That's
game.
Right.
Throw them, teach
right.
them to throw a ball. You mm-hmm. know, show them what a man is all about.
And another need they have is, now that there's a single parent having taken care of the children, they need babysitters. They need someone to go and watch the children when mommy goes to the doctor for an appointment. Someone's got to watch those
Change
kids.
Change the oil in her car.
All sorts of ways
roof.
You can be helpful.
All right.
Hello,
next
my name is Gabriela Fernandez. I'm from Palm Beach Island at College. If divorce seems inevitable, how can parents prepare their children for the divorce, specifically children under five?
Children under five are perhaps, in one sense, they are in the best way to deal with it because they're not fully aware of what is going on. What they could begin to do, if parents were really intelligent, and let's assume the divorce is inevitable, and I'm not saying I support divorce at all, but if it's going to happen, then plan intelligently for the future. Maybe arrange for temporary periods of separation by one of the parents. So a child gets used to that, you get used to as parents being apart for a while. Set up homes close by so that a child can be easily accessible. I have even encouraged couples, Jim, to move into separate rooms, bedrooms in the home, but stay together in the home for the child's sake, at least for a temporary
Even if you
day.
Can't get along with one another, you have a
you
mutual
can,
love for this child.
This child. Can't you at least be friends? If nothing else.
Just in the last few days, Arch, I talked to a non-custodial father who loves that little five-year-old boy so much. He would lay down his life in a heartbeat for this child, but has to work hard to get time mm-hmm. with him. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't live in the same area, and he has to drive hours to get to see mm-hmm. him. But in the most recent trip, this little boy said, as children typically will, "Daddy, why can't you and Mommy live together? Why can't it be like it used to be? Why can't our family be together? Why do you have to live here and Mommy lives over there?" Those are tough questions to answer. What would you
answer.
Tell him to say?
Well, I think for a very young child, the answer simply has to be, you can't understand it all right now. One day when you're older, you'll understand it better.
Hmm. Okay, next question.
Yes, my name is Dave Parrish. I'm from Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights, Illinois. And yesterday's broadcast, you mentioned the importance of parents being honest with their children. My question is, in cases such as infidelity or an addiction or something like that, how much should the parents really tell their children?
Good question. Thank you for asking that. I insist that one should be honest, but I don't think that one can be honest in matters like that and be fair always. But what I'm, you've got to tailor the information to the age of the child. A five-year-old doesn't understand about infidelity, doesn't understand it. Maybe that the explanation has to be delayed for a later time. If a child is older, then I think you should ask your spouse, not you, to tell your child. Put the responsibility back where it belongs. That's what triangulation is all about, if you've mm-hmm. studied anything about systems theory. And that way, you avoid your child blaming you for being the bearer of the bad message.
At some point, when they're a little older, the truth needs to come out.
Absolutely.
I've seen 30 and 40-year-old people who just now discovered that they were mad at the wrong parent.
That's right. That's true. The other principle here is, one is put the responsibility back where it belongs. The other is that you have to often prepare the way for the truth. And there are some children who, for whom that information would be devastating. They are too sensitive. They are too anxiety-riddled or whatever, too depressed. Prepare the way. Take care of the pain, the depression, and then ultimately the truth must prevail. Next question.
How are you? My name is Dan Olson. I'm a senior at Cedarville College in Cedarville, Ohio. And you dealt with the anger that children have with their parents.
Yes.
How about the anger they have with God? How do you deal with that? And
fight
through
good
that
question.
Good question. These are all good questions. You've been preparing them for this.
They're bright
kids. You are absolutely right. Children get angry at God. And the more Christian or religious the parents, the more they take it out on God. Because you've taught your children how to pray. You've taught your children how to believe in prayer. Now they pray that somehow Mommy and Daddy will get together again, and it doesn't happen. And who do they blame for that? It is God. And so I have a section in the book in which I talk about rebuilding a child's faith. And you do rebuild a child's faith not by attacking the other, but by modeling the principles of Christian life and living, the principles of forgiveness, the principles of kindness. And that, I think, is the most powerful way we can restore a child's faith. Next question.
My name is Elizabeth Atchison, and I'm a senior at Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. My question is on behalf of my mother and perhaps all other educators that deal with the epidemic of divorce every day in their classroom.
Yes.
I think that oftentimes educators are expected to take the place of the missing parent, whether a mother figure or a father figure. And how can educators effectively deal with the signs of depression in their classroom?
Right.
How can they help to heal these wounds in the classroom 8 hours a day?
Very good question. The first thing I would say is that educators are often the ones who see the consequences more clearly than anyone else, because they see the child every day. I would say that educators, first of all, should call parents to account for what's going on. It's not the teacher or the educator's responsibility to heal these children or to be the therapist to these children or even to be substitute mothers and fathers. That's not your role. I think your role is to call parents to account. And so that telephone call goes into the father who is living 10 miles away. I need to see you. I need to talk to you. Your child is depressed. It needs help. You need to get help for the child. And I think that is perhaps the most important thing that an educator can do. The second thing is, of course, to be understanding, to really see a hurting child and maybe even to fudge the boundaries a little bit, not to be as demanding. We've had this ongoing battle with the teachers of our boys who are not always understanding. Mm. Expect kids to... They don't, for example, allow one of my sons to be depressed occasionally. There are times when a child has got to be depressed. Mm. We were designed for depression. Depression is a healing emotion. But if you're never allowed to be depressed, how can healing take place? And I think teachers can sometimes be the ones who can facilitate that.
Well, we've been talking about the book, Helping Children Survive Divorce, What to Expect, How to Help, with Dr. Archibald Hart from Fuller Theological Seminary and Fuller School of Psychology, a former dean of Fuller, great friend to this ministry and to Shirley and me personally. You and Kathleen mean a lot to us, Arch, and you flew all the way over here to be with us these 2 days, and I sure appreciate it. And thanks to all the students for the excellent questions that you asked as well. It's been good to have you here, and we'll do it again. I hope and I believe that what we've been doing today has been helpful to parents who are out there and to children. A lot of kids listen to this program. Mm-hmm. It's always been amazing in the carpool on the way to school and so on.
I had
a youngster last week, about 10 years old, came up and talked to me about all the programs in the last week that he'd heard. So I hope that we've been helpful to a lot of people, and I know this book will, again, keep writing, Arch. And,
thank you, Jim.
When you get your next book done, come on back.
Right, I will. And thank you for allowing the word like this to get out. You have a phenomenal ministry. Now, you don't need any stroking. I know that. But I want to say it anyway. Thank you for what you're doing for the kingdom, Jim.
That's a gift from the Lord. He's given us the eyes and ears of a lot of people, and my prayer is that we won't do anything to mess it up. Thank you, everybody. God's blessings to you.
Well, you've caught the second half of a two-part series here on Focus on the Family, dealing with the subject of children of divorce. We appreciate you tuning us in and hope you'll join us for the next edition of the broadcast. Our program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our producer was Kelly Crowther. Engineering and production were handled by Pete Stokey and Jim Adam. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout. Looking forward to having you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.